Poem of All Dooms, Season 2, Episode 10, Why Dave Should Read Terry Pratchett and You Should Too. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Liren. This episode's quote is from Terry Pratchett's book, We Free Men. It's an interaction between a character named Tiffany. She's the main character, and I think she's about 12 in this first book. And she has gone to a group of people who are the teachers, and they travel all around, and you can go and you can pay them for knowledge. So she has gone to pay for some knowledge. "I would like a question answered today," said Tiffany. "Provided it's not the one about how you get baby hedgehogs," said the man. "No," said Tiffany patiently, "it's about zoology." "Zoology, eh? That's a big word, isn't it?" "No, actually it isn't," said Tiffany. "Patronizing is a big word. Zoology is really quite short." So normally we would have a recap here, but I have fallen woefully behind on our recaps. And I need to formalize them a little bit and get them typed out so that I can have something to read you guys that makes any sense at all. So I am going to do some work on that and we'll get back to you.
Okay, so this episode is perhaps less about gaming, but more about fantasy fiction. And it started with a conversation on the Audio Dungeon Discord where Dave Aldridge had said that he had read some Terry Pratchett. But he had only read the first 15 or so books that were out, and I think he's missing the best parts. So this episode is entitled, Why Dave Should Read Terry Pratchett and You Should Too.
He also said that he thought he outgrew them, and I felt the need to point out that grown-ups can love Discworld just as much. So the idea for this episode was born in a conversation that Jeff and I were having about how just how much Dave is missing in reading the rest of Terry Pratchett.
Okay, so a brief overview. Terry Pratchett was a British author of fantasy novels, especially comical works. He's best known for his Discworld series. There are 41 books in the Discworld series. His first novel was published in 1971. He published about 2 books a year, up until mid-2015, where he passed away. He was appointed an officer of the Order of the British Empire and knighted in 1998, and he has won many medals for literature over the years. Towards the end of his life, he suffered from early-onset Alzheimer's disease and is a great proponent of Alzheimer's research, and also did a television program that aired on the BBC about assisted suicide.
Okay, so why should you read Terry Pratchett? Well, I didn't know the answer to this question because I had never read any Terry Pratchett before I met Jeff. And he gifted me a copy of Good Omens by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. And I remember when I read it, it was so clever and funny and thought-provoking. I mean, there was a depth to the storytelling that I hadn't really come across very much. Probably the closest was Clive Barker. Not really his horror stuff. But anyway, I just remember thinking, wow, this is really interesting. And so as I read more, I didn't actually read more for a little while until, I don't think I read more until we had moved to Virginia. So probably 6 months later or so. And I realized that he is really, so much of it is clever humor. Some of it is silly, which I love some silly in my books, but it's not so much silly that it's distracting from the subject matter. So one of the things I loved more and more as I read more of his books is that he kind of satirized humanity, and the books were kind of thematic. So not all of them have like a, you know, really obvious theme, although, you know, in fact, most of them do, but you don't realize it. He's not smacking you upside the head with it. So some of the subjects that he covers are religion, That's Small Gods, Religious Fundamentalism, which is covered in a book called Thud, Patriotism, which is covered in Jingo, Gender Roles, which is covered in Monstrous Regiment, Slavery, which is covered in Snuff, Sentience, covered in Feet of Clay, Information Networks and Communication Systems, covered in Going Postal, and Bureaucracy and Money, covered in Making Money.
So if you go to read Pratchett, he has, in 41 books, obviously, he has a lot going on there. And there are multiple sequences of stories going on. There's not just one set of characters. It's all in the shared world of Discworld, at least the Discworld books are. There are some books outside of Discworld that we'll talk about later. But inside the Discworld series of 41 books, you have, I believe there's four main character sets that get books. So my favorite is the Guards books, which talk about the city watch in the main city that he's created called Ankh-Morpork. There's also the witch books, which are about a group of witches. There's the death books, which are about death and his daughter, actually his granddaughter, and the death of rats. And that's a whole nother character that shows up in other places. And then there's the Rincewind novels, which are about a wizard that isn't very good at being a wizard. And of course, there's some other books going on there too. There's a young adult series, the Tiffany Aching books, and there's a series of books that exist in Ankh-Morpork, but also have a main character called Moist von Lipwig in them, and there's three of those, Going Postal, Making Money, and Raising Steam. So I think that's all. Do you have anything to add?
No. To the Tiffany Aching books, I think he wrote those thinking that he was writing for younger readers, but he didn't talk down to people. So, I mean, I remember reading the first one, which is We Free Men, and thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I would have loved this book as a teenager because it's just irreverent and witty. And it's about a 12-year-old girl who is really, what is the word I seek?
Sharp, smart, witty.
Yeah.
Forward.
And just like she does what needs to be done, you know? So a lot of times books that involve 12-year-old girls are about daydreaming and wanting to be ballerinas and ride horses. Well, that's about as far as you can get away from Tiffany Aching. So I really enjoyed that first book so much. But they're actually part of the Witch series. So if you look at some of the, you can find websites that group his books by subject matter and all different kinds of organization. But the Tiffany Aching series is tangentially also part of the Witch series.
Most of the books that Liren discussed earlier, most of those are actually from the latter half of the 40 plus books, I think. So I think they've stopped reading just at the time when things were about to get really, really good and really, really poignant.
I think he moved further towards satirization and away from comedic as he went further on. I know when I read them, I realized when I was looking through the list, there are some really early ones that I don't think I have ever read. I've read most of them, but there are a couple that I think I may have missed. So I look forward to going back and fixing that. But I can remember reading some of the early ones, and I had already read a couple of the later ones because I actually read them in the order that Jeff had them. They were on his bookshelf, and I read the ones he had first. And then I started going to the library, and then I switched to audiobooks. So I read them completely out of order. And I remember thinking to myself, as I moved further into, you know, when they were published, that he was moving more and more towards, I don't know if it was conscious. I don't know if it wasn't that he had written enough of them and he was so comfortable in his Discworld setting that he got down to the business of talking about just the quirks of civilization and humanity and society and all of that in such a natural way. What I really love about them is I never felt like I was beat over the head with any of it.
Certainly. I think the earlier books, he started out with a book called Color of Magic, and then there was the next one was Light Fantastic. And they were they were definitely very humor-filled, very comedic, and they were spoofs of some of the fantasy literature of the day. Color Magic specifically has two characters in it that are spoofs of Fafard and the Grey Mouser books. So that's, he definitely started there, but over time, he went much deeper. And his world, I think, is fairly consistent, which is one of the things that really strikes me. From the very first book on, lots of the big pieces of the world exist and are consistent and don't change over time. Not that the characters don't change, but just the world that he has envisioned, the world that he built, the place that all of this happens, maintains a consistency throughout. So it's quite a job of world building.
Agreed. I had read a couple of series books, and I have to say that I got through, gosh, I don't know how many, maybe, I don't know, probably the eighth or the ninth book, when I realized, wow, I kind of have a loose idea of what Discworld looks like. So he does this a fascinating job of not giving you information dumps. I can't remember a time I've been reading one of his books that I went, okay, that's enough information. Something needs to happen, you know, which is really a nice surprise because holy cow, is there a lot of that going on, especially in early fantasy. I'm thinking of you, Hobbit.
Okay, so we're going to talk about some of our favorite books, specifically books that you could start reading that would start you on a series to read. So not jumping into the middle, but just a good starting point. But it's maybe not the first books that he wrote. Mine is quite a ways down the list, actually. So my first recommendation would be a book called Guards, Guards, which is the first book of the Watch series. So it's about the City Watch in the city of Ankh-Morpork and the Commander Vimes of the Watch and his crew of recruits. And they are a misfit bunch. And he's an alcoholic, and they have to deal with someone summoning a dragon into the city. So it's funny, yes, but the characters already have some depth to them. And it's a great place to start because you get a look at all these characters in their infancy and what they become. So my favorite character of any of his is Commander Vimes, who becomes the Duke, who, you know, moves up in the social status. So he starts at the bottom as a footman, basically in the watch, and through hard work and foiling crimes and lots of other things and marrying into the right family, he becomes, you know, essentially nobility in the city, but it doesn't ever go to his head. And he's always a man of the people. So Guards, Guards starts a whole lot of things that I really like. Several of them that we already mentioned. Jingo is a book about patriotism. And then probably my favorite of the Watch books later on is a book called Night Watch, where Sam Vimes ends up through magic going back in time and meeting a younger version of himself. And it's kind of an examination of how a person comes to be the person that they are, but it's done in a really clever way where he has to basically train himself. And it's about knowing things, or if you knew what you know now, what would you tell your younger self? It's a great book. It also deals with police brutality and the rule of law and lots of other things. But Guards, Guards is what starts all of the Watch books out.
The first book that I would recommend is called Monstrous Regiment. So I remember Monstrous Regiment, I think the first time I ever read it, it was by audiobook. I don't think I've ever actually read the physical book. And I can remember the first time I heard it, I thought, oh, that was interesting. But I think a lot of it kind of went over my head. So an interesting thing about that book is it's actually about a country where their religious beliefs cause a lot of friction with neighboring countries. And it's a book about war. But in the midst of all of that, I mean, it isn't. The first time I heard it, I thought, oh, it's a book about war. But then after I thought about it, I thought, wait a minute, it's really not, though. And then we've listened to it so many times since then. And I just, it's very deep. It's a rich book. I think that I would have benefited from listening to it in sections and then just thinking about what I heard and then listening to the next section, which is crazy. I mean, that probably doesn't make it sound like much fun, but it is a really good book. But the interesting thing about that book is that it's also about things like women's rights and transgenderism and all kinds of interesting things that he never really talks about directly. One of the things I love about him is he really has a knack for talking about the state of being a human who's outside the norm without making it like otherizing it. I don't know exactly how to say that, but I did learn something really interesting when I was researching Monstrous Regiment to recommend it. So first of all, it was his 31st novel in the Discworld series, and it takes its name from an anti-Catholic 16th century tract by John Knox, the full title of which is The First Blast of the Trumpet Against the Monstrous Regiment of Women. So, of course, I had no idea of that when I first heard it. And the cover illustration on the original British edition is a parody of Joe Rosenthal's photograph raising the flag on Iwo Jima. And if you look at it, it's a bunch of soldiers raising a white flag that's a pair of, like, bloomers. So this is something that happens over and over whenever I do any more research into his books. He really had such a grasp on what he was doing and why, and I love that about him.
Well, Monstrous Regiment, to me, is all about gender roles in society and, military service to one's country. It gets a little silly, I think, towards the end there's a portion of the book that has kind of an odd Vietnam reference to it. In a humorous kind of way, and not to humorize Vietnam, but up until that point, it's kind of an indictment of military service and how institutionalizing it is, and how people have a hard time existing outside of it. But also, like I said, it's all about gender roles in society, which is really I think some people have commented. I've read some comments online that they think it's fairly heavy-handed and not subtle. I just thought it was good fun and good food for thought.
I really don't remember a time when I have found something that he did heavy-handed.
So I will continue on. My second recommendation for a good place to start in Pratchett would be We Free Men, which is the first of the books that feature the adolescent witch Tiffany Aching. So this book has a lovely fairy bent to it. In his world, pixies, which we'd normally spell P-I-X-I-E-S, are little things that flit around, kind of with dragonfly wings. Well, that's not what Terry Pratchett's fairies looked like. They were pixies, P-I-C-T-I-E-S, and they were tiny men who painted themselves blue and liked a good kicking and battle, and brought their Goneagle, their battle poet, with them to places. And they're very funny. And I think this book, especially if you can get it on audiobook, is just a joy to read because of the accents and because of the voice work. The audiobooks are read by Stephen Briggs, I believe, at this point. And he just does a masterful job voicing these little guys that are ostensibly, children of fairy, but really kind of miscreants, but in a funny way. It's a wonderful book. It's labeled as a young adult book. And I think the first one is probably more young adult than the later books, but there are chunks of it that are not at all there for the younger audience. There's some remembrances of Tiffany's grandmother, which has a lot to do with loss and grieving. There's a lot of stuff about work and about witches, because in the Discworld, witches aren't heavy magic users. They're more teachers and confidants and doctors, and they do the work that needs to get done, that nobody else is doing, and their last resort is to use magic, which I find is a fascinating take on magic and on witches. But it's this sisterhood that binds them all together, but they don't see each other very often because there's not a lot of witches in the world. And so Tiffany Aching starts out this book, and she's a young girl, and she's on this area that doesn't have a witch anymore. And her grandmother, I wouldn't say used to be a witch, but used to be the matriarch and now has passed on. So it has a great poignant set of references to it. She has to take care of her younger brother. She has to go save him from the queen of the fairies, which is a great trek and journey adventure to itself. But yeah, it's just a fantastic book. And like I said, if you can get it on audiobook, the voice acting is just stupendous. What would you say about it, Liren?
Oh my gosh, I would say every book in that series has amazing voice acting. One thing about that series of books is that I felt like each book had a fairly different theme to it, but he tied them together so masterfully. So to me, this series is really an example of him at the prime of his writing. I mean, I feel like that was him when he was just being the master of, you know, Discworld that he was. So when people ask me what are my favorite Pratchett books, the first thing out of my mouth is almost always the Tiffany Aching series. Of course, then I pause for a second and go, oh, wait, hold on, because there's other good ones, too. So it's really hard to pick a favorite. But series-wise, I think that's my favorite. The Tiffany Aching series is my favorite.
So they start when Tiffany is about 12. And through the course of 5 books, she grows up. And by the 4th book, which is called I Shall Wear Midnight, which was published in 2010, she's 16 at that point. And about to become a witch in her own right. And that book starts off with her dealing with domestic abuse. So it is not, I think, meant for kids at that point. Kids are meant to grow up with this series. I don't know, maybe some kids read that and don't, and aren't disturbed by it. But that part of that book, I don't say it was shocking to me, but it was not what I was expecting to start that book. And then the last book in the series is called The Shepherd's Crown, and it's the very last book that was published, that he published. It was published after his death in 2015. So it's a really kind of a poignant, sad, I'd say it's sad. It's a poignant ending, but it's sad for people to read because it is the last of his books.
Yeah, when I finished that book, I cried for a while, but it wasn't because of the book. It was because it was the last one. And I have to point out, when we were talking about making this podcast and our youngest son, who's 18, heard us talking about it, he was like, oh man, I love I Shall Wear Midnight. I think that one's actually his favorite of the ones he's heard. And he's heard almost, I mean, I think he's heard all of them that I have. As he's been growing up, we've been listening to them in the car on long trips all along. So, but I was really surprised to hear him say he loved I Shall Wear Midnight so much. But I think part of that is because he's 18. And in that book, it's really about her coming of age, you know? So I think that especially struck him. He also loves Feet of Clay, as a matter of fact, because in Feet of Clay, it's about the golems. And he feels like he's different in our society because he's autistic, much like the golems were in Discworld.
So what is your second recommendation?
My second recommendation is Going Postal. So Going Postal is the first of the 3 Moist von Litvig books. And, you know, this is another book that has a lot of themes in it, but it's really about a guy who is kind of a swindler. He's sort of a ne'er-do-well, but he's one of those like heart of gold in spite of himself kind of characters. And one of the great things about this book is that he interacts with Lord Vetinari a lot. And Lord Vetinari is the guy who runs Ankh-Morpork. And he is just a fascinating character all on his own. So Moist commits a crime and ends up interacting with Vetinari and getting assigned to run the post office. That is why the book is called Going Postal. So this book has so many interesting themes in it. I mean, first of all, it's about like how things like postal services or any kind of communication service work, how government services work, how corporate takeovers work, because there's some of that going on, how human rights activism works, hacking, you know, the value of currency, public relations. I mean, it's got it all. So I remember when I read this book, the fascinating thing about this book, so when I went and did some research, I noticed this. I remember noticing this. But see, we listened to this book. I didn't read this book first. I listened to it first. And so I didn't notice it as drastically. But this was actually the first Discworld book that had chapters. He had only ever done chapters in his children's books. But this book had chapters. And each chapter begins with a synopsis of philosophical themes, kind of like some Victorian novels do. And when I was reading through and they were talking about, especially like on the Wikipedia page, I'm sorry, one of the cats is moving and the pug doesn't like it. Enough out of you. Sorry about that. They point out that that's actually similar to Jules Verne's stories, which of course I did not put together. That's another example of when I really look, I'm like, man, his books are really, you know. But so this book has a couple great characters in it. Moise von Lippix himself is a wonderful character. Adorabelle Deerhart is a wonderful character. She's gritty and she doesn't take crap from anybody, and I really like her. So anyway, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil the book for anyone, but it is just a wonderful book. And again, these are his later books. So I didn't realize this, but so I think I said Monstrous Regiment was his 31st book. Going Postal was his 33rd book. I didn't realize they were published that close together. All right. The pug and I are going to have a conversation with the spray bottle of water, and hopefully she'll be quiet. All right. Do you have any thoughts about Moise von Lippix that you'd like to share?
Moise is one of my favorite characters. The Going Postal deals with not only the postal service, but also the telegraph in the clacks is what they call it. And right. It's about information systems and kind of a proto-internet. So it makes my engineer's heart swell when I read it, because part of it is about the engineers engineering this new communication system and trying to get the world to understand what it is that they've built and how it could help them and not lose it to corporate takeover and greed. So I liked that part of the book a lot. So those were all Discworld books. And if you're not interested in reading anything in the Discworld, I'm not sure why you wouldn't want to start there. But if you didn't want to start there, he wrote lots of books that are outside the Discworld. They all have their own take on things. I don't think many of them actually exist inside other series. I don't think he did a lot of series writing outside of Discworld. But I just wanted to note a couple of good starting points for non-Discworld books. The first would probably be Good Omens, which Liren already talked about. Also available on Amazon as a wonderful 6-episode series about an angel and a demon who don't want to see the apocalypse happen because they kind of like humanity after spending thousands of years with human beings.
Well, I have to say, I loved the series, but the book still has a very special place in my heart. So I would start with the book and then watch the series.
He has another book, and this was the one that kind of made me really wonder what the publisher was thinking. It's called Nation, and it was published, I want to say, in 2008. And it was listed at the time as a young adult novel. So I thought, oh, this is going to be light and semi-friendly. And it is anything but. It is about a young man on an island who he goes out to do his rite of manhood travel. He travels to one of the other islands, and a tidal wave destroys his entire civilization. And he comes back, and he has to deal with the fact that everything that he knew is gone. And eventually, he finds a shipwreck survivor, a girl, also a teen, and they have to kind of work together to defy ancestral spirits and to make new belief systems. And it's a book that will really make you think about why it is you think the way you think about things and how much of it is based in the society you're in. And if that was gone, what would you think or how would you reinvent your belief systems? So that's not, I mean, I guess that's young adult, but it's a bit darker than I had come upon previously.
Yeah, that book really caught me off guard, I will say. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because I remember when I read that book, that is a book I read on paper first. And I can remember a couple times I sat that down and just went, whoa, like thought for a few minutes about what he was actually talking about. And I really enjoyed that book a lot. And it also, on at least two occasions I can specifically remember, made me cry just because. And it wasn't about sadness. It was just moving, you know? Now, realize I'm a big squishy baby because remember, you know, I'm a fluffy bunny. But it's really good. And if you are not someone who thinks you're going to like Terry Pratchett, at the very least, do yourself the favor of reading that book.
Another book that he did outside of the series was called Dodger. Dodger was written in 2012. It is... what to say about it? It actually is in the Victoriana, or it's very Dickens-like when it starts.
Well, if you look at the Wikipedia page for it, it says it's set in early Victorian London and inspired by Charles Dickens' character, the Artful Dodger.
Ah, there we go. I knew there was a link there. Also a wonderful story. About a sewer scavenger, of all things.
Yeah.
but I don't believe that there were any ties to Discworld in that book at all. It was completely standalone.
Yep, much like Nation. Yep.
But if Dickensian London is your thing and you want a kind of a fanciful tale set in that era, then Dodger might be a book for you. And I believe it was about 2005, I actually got to see Terry Pratchett at a book signing. He was in Washington, D.C. at the time. I believe it was for the book called Thud, which was also a watch book. So on my list of books that I really like, and it's about religious fundamentalism in the dwarves. And I went up to the bookstore where he was signing. I brought my book. I went with a friend, and he's a very warm person. And he came out and he had his book with him, and he said to the gathered masses there, you know, they've asked me to read a chapter from my book, but since you're all here, I assume that you can all read. So instead, I think I'd just like to talk about what it is that I've been doing lately and what's creative, and then take questions. And that's what he did. And it was much more friendly than just someone who read a book and then sat behind a table and signed things. So I found him to be very generous of spirit. He always had a wonderful hat that he wore. He's kind of a shorter man, not super short, but shortish. And just very, very pleasant and very accommodating. And I think he really appreciated his readers and his fans.
I know I envied you a lot when you got to go see him.
So any parting thoughts on why Dave should read Terry Pratchett?
Really, I think that I have read a lot of books in my life. And it could be, of course, I think there are authors that resonate with different people. And, you know, it isn't that I didn't love The Hobbit. Please realize, I did love The Hobbit. It was the second book that I found pretty painful. but something about Discworld resonates with me. And I kind of think it's the way that when I look at, excuse me, when I look at the overarching Discworld series, what I really see is a picture of humanity written by a person who loves people, understands they're quirky and weird and embraces that. And one of the things I really like about him too is his characters who are quote unquote bad guys are not, most of them are not bad guys in the comic book sense of the word, where they're just evil for evil sense. he actually makes them understandable and like gives them motives that makes you go, oh yeah, maybe that is why some people who are that way are that way, you know? So I think it could have been my age when I was reading it. I don't know though, because even now, you know, I'm 50 years old. This is 20 years later. I still, when I listen to his audiobooks, love them and get a lot out of them. And I have yet to come back to one and go, whoa, that's kind of sappy or anything like that. So to me, there is just a rich tapestry of the ridiculousness of humanity to be found there.
I think the thing that always has gotten me is the self-consistency of the world and the books. I never felt like he wrote something and I went, wait a minute. And, you know, 25 books ago, that was different. He always seemed to have a sense of place and a sense of how things worked. And I thought that his ideas on how a city worked under kind of a benevolent dictatorship were kind of interesting as a form of government. And as you mentioned, Lord Vetinary is a wonderfully complex character. We never got a book that was all about him, but we get snippets of him in lots of different places. And that's one of the things I really love about Night Watch is when we go back in time, we see a young Vetinary prior to being the ruler of the city, just being a student there. And we get to see him in a much different light. So I really think he tried really hard to paint an amazingly complex picture. And I think he did a really wonderful job doing it.
Agreed. And this message is just for Dave. Well, I hope that you pick up at least one more Pratchett book and give it another try. And I can't wait to hear how you feel about it. Just know that even if you pick it up and you don't like it for some reason that I can't fathom, I will still think you're awesome. We take pictures with people so they could remember us and leave memories behind so they don't forget us. And the difference between the two are the same. We leave these moments in the air, hoping that somewhere someone will find them and make sense of everything we chose to ignore. By Robert M. Drake from Black Butterfly. If you'd like to contact Jeff or Liren or Rosie, our pug, feel free to leave a message through the Anchor app. Hit the link in the show notes and leave an Anchor voice message on the web or email podcast@tomeofalldooms.com. Music is Space Harmony by purple-planet.com.